This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky for November 2011. Well, you don't have to stay up too late to see the heavens now, which is really good for someone like me who likes sleeping. If you do look towards the southeast after sunset, you should see the square of Pegasus. It's the winged horse seen upside down. Down to its lower right, there's an arc of stars that ends up with the star Enif, and that forms the mane and the head of the horse. With binoculars, if you just move a little bit up to the right of Enif, you might find a little fuzzy blob, certainly obvious in a small telescope. It's M15, a globular cluster, a spherical grouping of stars that dates back, we think, from the origin of our galaxy. If you go to the top left-hand corner of the square of Pegasus, it's a star called Alpheratz, and then go two stars curving round and up a bit to the left. That point turns sharp right, move past one star, the same distance again, you should again see a little fuzzy glow. And that's the core of the great nebula in Andromeda, the Andromeda Galaxy, M31, visible to your unaided eyes. And I always think it's nice that the photons that your eyes are actually detecting left there around 2.5 million years ago. If around the time of new moon, when there's no light in the sky, it's really dark and the sky is so-called transparent, it might be worth, particularly with binoculars, moving back down to the star where you turn sharp right and carrying on a little bit to the left, the same distance. You might see a little fuzzy glow there. It's M33. In Triangulum. It's the third largest galaxy in our local group after, first of all, Andromeda, second, we are, and then third, M33. Moving over and up, we have the lively W-shaped constellation of Cassiopeia, fairly high in the sky overhead. If you work down towards the lower left, you come towards the constellation of Perseus. The Milky Way is running along there, so the sky is actually quite rich. About halfway between Cassiopeia and Perseus, you might just see a little fuzzy glow, and binoculars will show possibly two little fuzzy blobs together. A telescope will show two lovely clusters. It's called the Perseus Double Cluster. Coming down from there, we're coming into Taurus. And of course, we have that lovely grouping of stars, the Pleiades Cluster, one of my favourite objects in the sky, and binoculars or a small telescope show it very well. Down to the lower left of the Pleiades is the Hyades cluster, a V-shape. It makes up the head of Taurus the Bull. There's a bright red star called Aldebaran, the eye of the bull. It's not part of the cluster. It's about halfway between us and the cluster, and it's moving in a completely different direction. It's actually a red giant star. And in fact, red giants tend to look orange, as does Aldebaran. Later in the evening, you'll actually see Orion rising in the east. That will be better seen in December and January. Or, if you like getting up early, as I happened to this morning, it was beautifully seen in the southwest. So it's a very nice constellation to observe. Well, let's have a look at the planets this month. In fact, quite a nice little array that we can look at. The most obvious is, of course, Jupiter. It reached opposition, which means it's actually due south around midnight, and pretty well nearest to us, on the 29th of October. It means that in the evening sky in November, it'll be beautifully obvious and fairly high up, which is really nice. It's in the constellation of Aries the Ram. The angular size is now getting on for 50 arc seconds, pretty well as big as it ever gets, because Jupiter is at perihelion when it's nearest the Sun. So as we lie between the Sun and Jupiter, it's obviously nearest to us. I can't think of any better reason to buy a small telescope if you haven't got one, to have a look at the equatorial bands and perhaps pick out the great red spot. And in the highlights, I've given the list of the times when the great red spot is on the central meridian. Just look for night sky in Google to find it. Well, Saturn passed behind the Sun on the 18th of October. That's called superior conjunction. And it will reappear in the pre-dawn sky during November. It lies in Virgo, shining at a magnitude of plus 0.8, just a few degrees from the first magnitude star Spica. They get their closest, just 4 degrees apart, on the 14th of November. And by month's end, it'll be visible some 20 degrees above the southeastern horizon as dawn breaks. Now, over the last year or so, the rings have gone through edge-on, so we haven't seen them very well. This apparition, however, they'll be much better seen, and if we do look at it this month, you'll find the rings are tilted at 13.5 degrees to the line of sight. So they are opening out, and with a small telescope should show you the Cassini division quite easily. Mercury lies 2 degrees below Venus for the first half of November, shining at magnitude minus 0.3, but you'll almost certainly need binoculars to pick it out because it'd be very low above the horizon. But of course, don't use binoculars until the sun has set. As the month continues, Venus climbs up to the left whilst Mercury drops out of view and its magnitude falls and it just disappears from sight. So there is a chance of seeing Mercury early in the month. Mars is coming towards its apparition early next year. At the moment in Leo, it's shining at magnitude plus 1. And on the 10th and 11th of November, it passes very close to the brightest star in Leo called Regulus. By the end of the month, it rises before midnight, and before dawn, it'll be 40 degrees or so above the horizon. So it'll be quite well worth looking at, I think, with a small telescope. Its salmon pink disk may begin to show you some features, such as the V shape of Syrtis Major and the North Polar Cap. In the next month or two, it'll become even better to observe and get somewhat larger. Currently, it's about 7 arc seconds in diameter. That will increase to over 10 after Christmas. Well, Venus has also passed behind the sun recently, and it's still on the far side of the sun from us, presenting an 11 arc second disk which is about 90% illuminated. It will be visible to view just above the southwestern horizon at the beginning of the month. Magnitude is minus 3.8, quite low down though, so you might still need binoculars and a good low horizon to observe. But of course, wait until the sun has set. Well, finally, some highlights this month. One or two I've actually sort of indicated before. November the 11th, 1 hour before dawn. Mars is just 1.3 degrees from Regulus in Leo. It remains close to Regulus for about 5 days around that date. Well, we do have a well-known meteor shower this month. It's called the Leonids, and it's on the night of the 16th, 17th. Probably best to observe around midnight, because there will be a moon in the sky, and when that gets to high elevation, it will actually wash out the fainter meteors. So it's perhaps not the best year to observe them. It's the dust that's released by the comet Temple-Tuttle, which rounds the sun every 33 years. And as the name implies, the radiant, the point from which the meteors appear to spring from, lies in the head of Leo the Lion, sometimes called the sickle. I've mentioned Saturn. On the 22nd of November, there's a very nice grouping of Saturn, Spica in Virgo, and a thin, waning crescent moon. Should be nice to look at. And on November the 27th, you should be able to see Venus and a thin crescent moon just after sunset. And with a bit of luck, you might well spot the old moon in the new moon's arms. And on the night sky page, I've added a picture that I managed to take a few months ago, showing the old moon rather nicely. It's not a bad month to search for Neptune. And towards the end of the month, the 20th to 27th, when there's no moon in the sky, is probably the right time to do it. It's in fact, Aquarius, close to the star Iota Aquarii, and I have the star chart on the night sky page to help you find it. Try and have a look, if you can, on the 22nd of November, because on that day, it'll be in precisely the position it was when it was first discovered by Gall and Durest at the Berlin Observatory. So a bit of history there. we still have quite a bright comet in the sky. It's called Comet Garrad. And one can see it with binoculars. It's in the constellation of Hercules, down to the left of the Keystone, near the star Alpha Hercules. Not a very bright star, actually. Again, I put a little star chart. Now, Comet Garrad is actually quite far from the Sun. It doesn't really get closer than the orbit of Mars. That means, at the moment, it's actually not moving very quickly across the sky. It just moves around in a relatively small arc during this month. So it's quite an easy object to pick up with binoculars. It's about magnitude 6. If you found it, move up to the left, to the right-hand side of the Keystone, and again, you ought to see another little fuzzy glow, which is the wonderful Hercules globular cluster, M13, the finest globular cluster that we see in our northern skies. Again, when there's not any moonlight in the sky towards the end of November, you have a chance to observe an asteroid. It's called Eunomia, and it's number 15, which means it's the 15th that was discovered. It actually gets quite bright. Magnitude 8, now that's not visible to our eyes, but a pair of binoculars on a dark night should pick it up. It's passing through Perseus, lying below Cassiopeia, high in the eastern sky this month. On the 28th, it's almost overhead, lying in front of what is called the California Nebula. Now, it's a lovely little reddish glow region, excited hydrogen gas, very hard to see visually, shows up well photographically. But nevertheless, that would be quite a nice time to try and see it. Again, a chart on the night sky page. Finally, you could observe the planet Uranus. Uranus and Neptune are both in the sky. It's got a magnitude of plus 5.8, so under a dark sky, you could see it with your unaided eye. I was in mid-Wales this last weekend, and using a dark sky meter, I actually showed that we should see objects down to about 6.2 magnitude. So mid-Wales actually is quite a good area to go to observe the heavens. It lies in Pisces, about 15 degrees below the eastern side of the square of Pegasus. If you've got a small telescope, and I hope you will have before long if you haven't already, then you'll see a small disk just under 4 arc seconds across. Rather attractive bluey-green colour. So there's a lot to see in November. We have long nights to do it in, which is great. I do hope you enjoy it.
Thanks for that, Ian. And now John Field tells us what you can see in the southern night sky for November.
Kia ora and welcome to the November Jotcast coming from Carter Observatory, Wellington, New Zealand. In our evening sky, our winter constellations of Scorpius and Sagittarius are sliding down towards our western horizon, whilst in the east, Taurus, Orion and Canis Major rise, heralding the arrival of summer. Mercury and Venus will be close together in the western sky after sunset during the early part of November. By the middle of the month, they'll be close to the red star Antares, the heart of the Scorpion. Jupiter will be in the northeast, appearing as a brilliant white star and will be high in the northern sky by midnight. Having just passed opposition, Jupiter is at its closest to the Earth and it will appear at its brightest in our sky. Due to its circular orbit, Jupiter's size varies very little from one opposition to the next. Whilst Mars has a more elliptical orbit, so its size and brightness will vary from one opposition to the other. Another advantage of opposition is that the planet is usually well placed for observing in the evening sky. Binoculars and small telescopes will reveal Jupiter's four largest moons, which will change position from night to night. With larger telescopes, bending on Jupiter will become apparent, and occasionally you may see Jupiter's great red spot. The planet also appears a little fatter around the equator, and this is due to the planet's fast rotation and it being made of gas and fluids rather than rocky world like the Earth. The three brightest stars in our night sky can be found along our southeastern horizon. Brilliant Sirius, the brightest true star in our night sky, rises in the east. It is the brightest star in the constellation of Canis Major, the large dog. The dog rises upside down in our night sky, so, to us, he is seen lying on his back. Sirius is 26 times brighter than our Sun and just 8.6 light years away. It is twice the mass of our Sun and it will burn through its nuclear fuel much faster, eventually becoming the red giant star. Orbiting Sirius is a remnant of a star called a white dwarf. This was originally a much larger star than Sirius that has used up its fuel much faster and evolved into a white dwarf about 120 million years ago. This white dwarf has been nicknamed the Pup due to its diminutive size. It shines at magnitude 8 and is overwhelmed by Sirius's brilliance at magnitude minus 1.46. And Hara, the second brightest star in the constellation, is confusingly listed alphabetically as the fifth. It is a binary star about 430 light years away from our solar system. The main star shines at a magnitude of 1.5, and its total luminosity is estimated to be 20,000 times that of our Sun. If this star was at the same distance as Sirius, it would appear 7 times brighter in the night sky than the planet Venus when it's at its brightest. This star is also one of the brightest extreme ultraviolet sources in the sky. Although bright, the magnitude 7.5 companion star can only be resolved in large telescopes, since the main star is approximately 250 times brighter, and its light overwhelms the companion star. About 4.7 million years ago, Hara was about 34 light years away from the Sun, and was the brightest star in our sky with a magnitude of minus 3.99. No other star has attained this brightness since, nor will any other star attain this brightness for at least 5 million years. Marking the base of the dog's tail is the star Wethen, the third brightest star in Canis Major. This yellow supergiant star is about 1,800 light years away and 50,000 times brighter than our Sun. This star is estimated to be only 10 million years old, and in the next 100,000 years will become a red giant star prior to exploding as a supernova. In the belly of the dog we find the open cluster of over 100 stars called M41. M41 can be seen as a hazy patch to the human eye, and in binoculars and telescopes you will see many stars, including a number of red giants. The three brightest stars in the night sky, Sirius, Canopus and Alpha Centauri, will be sharing the sky along the southern Milky Way. The Southern Cross crust can be found in the southwestern sky after sunset and will get progressively lower during the evening. From New Zealand, crust will never set, it skirts along our southern horizon. To the northeast of Sirius, we find the dominant constellations of Taurus the Bull and Orion the Hunter. These are constellations recognised by most Northern Hemisphere cultures. The face of Taurus is outlined by the V-shaped asterism of stars known as the Hyades cluster. In Greek mythology, the Hyades were the five daughters of Atlas and half-sisters to the Pleiades. After the death of their brother Hyas, the weeping sisters were transformed into a cluster of stars that was afterwards associated with rain. The brightest star in this group is Orange Aldebaran. In Arabic, the name means follower, and this came about as the star follows the Pleiades across the sky. Aldebaran is in reality a foreground star only 65 light years away, while the other stars in the V are 153 light years away. Taurus's long horns extend down towards our northern horizon. Near the fainter of the two horns, telescopes will reveal the faint smudge of light called M1, or more commonly, the Crab Nebula. This expanding cloud of dust and gas is the result of a supernova that was observed in 1054. The Pleiades cluster marks the Bull's Back, also known as the Seven Sisters, Makariki, Subaru, and many other names. They are a cluster of stars well known in both hemispheres. Often called the Seven Sisters, most modern eyes only see six due to light pollution. A good test of seeing in the darkness of your sky is to see how many stars you can count. Dozens will be visible in binoculars or a wide-field telescope. This cluster is about 440 light years away. Its brightest stars are around about 200 times brighter than the Sun. Orion in the northern hemisphere view has its shield raised towards Taurus and the club ready for action. The line of three stars marks Orion's belt. The line of eight stars above and to the left of the belt form Orion's sword dangling from his belt. A faint haze in the soil of Orion, known as the Orion Nebula, is a vast star-forming region about 1,200 light years away. To most southern hemisphere sky watchers, the belt and sword form the pot, or the saucepan. To Maori, these three stars are known as Tolkoro. To the Mayans, Orion was seen as a turtle with three picture stones on its back. The Elnotate writer on Sate formed a triangular hearth of Orion Nebula representing the smoke from the fire in the hearth. This was seen as the place where the heavens and the earth were separated. And on that exciting thought, we wish all our listeners clear skies from the team here at Carter Observatory.